Welcome, Red Eyes members. Thank you very much for joining us. We are talking with Kathleen McErlane about the mystery of the Hollow Earth and the reality of underground bases. And in this second hour, we are going to talk some more about the potential activity that might take place underneath our feet. And again, please bear in mind that this would be the perfect place for any kind of experimentation, scientifically or technologically speaking. As Kathleen mentioned, it's very, very difficult to know what goes on down there, and you might think it's not fair to assume the worst, but again, I mean, consider what goes on the surface, the state the world is in, and I think it's absolutely fair to suggest the worst and to actually try to figure out what actually takes place in some of these facilities. And maybe we can begin this segment, Kathleen, to talk about the concept a little bit more about the new man that you mentioned in the first segment. I think this is really fascinating, and there seems to be something to this idea as well, that either we are being changed in some way, or the black ops, the elite of this planet, are in a way kind of creating a new human being that will almost be unleashed or presented to the world in a way. Maybe you can tell us a bit what you found in regards to the new man. Do you think that it is we who are being changed, or do you think that it is a totally new human being that will be kind of released on the Earth, if you will?
Well, one thing that I sort of pick up with all of the research that I've done is that basically the majority of humanity is mostly left behind. They're not really interested in advancing us spiritually or technologically. Technologically, we get this sort of tidbits of technology that amuse us, like iPods and big screen TVs and the internet. The new man, if you want to look at someone who's like a human being who is being advanced in the most advanced way that they can do, would be a good place to, or a good way to explain it would be the story of a man called Michael Relf, who his story's been sort of documented fairly well on a book called The Mars Records, which you may or may not have heard of.
Yeah, I've heard about it, yes.
Yeah, his story is just remarkable, and I think his story about sort of how he was chosen as a young boy to be spiritually and technologically advanced to work on the planet Mars, and he was not only implanted, but sort of given advanced programming very quickly to sort of give him almost that you could compare sort of what was happening to him and others like him to Superman. Not that he could fly, let me just say that.
Sure, sure.
But he certainly had incredible mental powers to kill people because that was his job, to sort of protect Mars when he worked there, which may sound quite amazing to some people to hear that. But we've actually had a Mars program for decades. Going back to at least the 50s, we've been on Mars through the, through the American National Security Agency, if you can call them American. that's really, I mean, if you want to look at Mars as sort of like a new world, that's where they're really sort of creating people, vast colonies of people who are incredibly superior to us sort of mainstream poor people down here who are just sort of getting by every day paying our bills. But these people are superior mentally, physically. They are living the Star Wars sort of dream. They're flying around in amazing sort of aircraft defending with other races. This is the reality, and this is the advanced human that is currently in operation and has been in operation for decades.
Mm.
So that's also happening on the moon. But you know, if you want to look at later things called jump gates to get to Mars, I mean, that's how we're getting there. All those disbelieving people who are now hearing this.
So tell us a bit more about jump gate technology. I've heard about various people speaking about this as well. Do you think that this is what they're using to jump to different planets within the solar system, or do you think it's even further out than that?
It's very hard. I mean, even Michael Relf, who actually worked on Mars for 20 years, did not know where the jump gate on Mars went to. He assumed it went to the Pleiades system. He had to defend it. He had to protect it from other races who would try and sort of take control of it, really. But he did not know where it went. But there was the idea of a jump gate. The actual jump gate from Mars went to an underground base in a state in America. And it was like the way he describes it, it was like walking down a corridor, and you'd walk down very slowly, and all of a sudden you'd feel like someone sort of, you know, not punched you in the stomach, but sort of like a hit to the stomach, and you had to keep walking, and you were basically on Mars. You might sort of collapse at that point because it's quite extraordinary to do what he, you know, to sort of jump to Mars, but that was how they made it to Mars, and there was one to the moon. But what was interesting in discovering things about the jump gate was that it's actually a modern version of what was anciently known as the Stargate.
Yes.
I mean, there's different names for these sorts of things, but there was a place called Tiwanaku. I think that's how you
pronounce it. Yeah, that's right.
and they had there was an ancient city in Tiwanaku where they had they were basically called like a doorway or a stargate, and even the modern researchers were coming across the native peoples who said, oh yes, people still come through, which was quite extraordinary. There's a sort of a brilliant blue light and strange tall blonde people walk through, and we don't know who they are, but we stay away from them. So these ancient doorways were sort of used to jump vast distances. Sometimes they were used to go to the hollow earths. Other times they were used to go to other planets. But this is just a jump gate is just a modern take on that stargate.
Go ahead.
No, go.
I just want to ask you if you know that, if it has to be a sender and a receiver, so to speak, does it have to be a device on the other end as well, for example, on Mars or at an underground base for this to work, for the connection to work, so to speak?
That's how I understand that it works, that it's like a journey and you have to have an ending. So, yes, there does have to be a receiver. Otherwise you could end up anywhere.
Yeah.
The idea was that there were places, that this was sort of a technology that, although it was advanced to us, it was not advanced to other races across the universe. Apparently there were, it's sounding a little bit like, I don't know if you get the television program Stargate.
Yeah, we do, yes.
Yeah, it's sounding a little bit like that, and that's crosses over into how the media, represent the truth of what's happening in the military, and they represent it into the media. But there are these gates or doorways all over the universe. But this person, Michael Relf, and later people came out as well and said, oh, yes, I've been to Mars. I've worked on the Mars program as well.
Yeah.
But their memories were repressed. He only knew about Mars. So yes, there would definitely needed to be an end to that journey.
Yes, and have you heard anything about if these jump gates or the jump gate technology is an ancient thing or is it built? Do you know if it's built by human beings fairly in the modern era, so to speak?
What I could understand was that the Stargate was the ancient form of the modern jump gate. So the ancients did have that, and it's important to remember that the ancients, although we call them ancients, but they were as advanced as us, as this sort of hopping from planet to planet. We may not be aware of it publicly, and again we come across this media blackout of this sort of technology, but the Jumpgate is just the modern form of the Stargate. And what I found out about, say, the underground base in Australia, Pine Gap, was that they use their sort of technology to transport planes or UFOs or whatever to the moon. That's Pine Gap's connection was to the moon. So that was really Pine Gap's role to send all sorts of funny things. And sometimes these were things picked up by the locals around Pine Gap. Sometimes the locals have seen UFO-shaped discs or saucers.
Yeah.
What are they doing there? Apparently it's just an intelligence station. Well, I don't think so. But Pine Gap's connection is to the moon. So
really?
America seems to have more to do with the Mars program.
That is really interesting. And that definitely opens up a can of worms in regards to the stories we hear about an extraterrestrial civilization potentially on the moon or on Mars or anything like that. What we potentially at this point is looking at then is actually human activity throughout the solar system, and there isn't anyone else around. But do you think that is the case, though? Do you think that there could be other, shall we call them, more benevolent races around that from, you know, on the good side or whatever, that's trying to prevent the use of this technology or in any other kind of way, trying to prevent what is happening right now?
There's definitely, I mean, it's important not to be so, become so bogged down in sort of the negativity of it. There are benevolent races out there, but there is this sort of universal law which prevents them from interfering in our earthly affairs. They want to see if we can somehow spiritually ascend and overcome all the negativity, but there are the benevolent races out there. They're in contact with many people, but at this stage they don't have anything to do with the moon or Mars or Venus, which is our sort of closest neighbours that we know of that are inhabited. They're coming from a great distance, unfortunately. But it's good to know. It's good to know that there are, you know, the benevolent friends out there. But unfortunately, they can't always interfere. But there's definitely a feeling that they will prevent a massive sort of destruction of the earth. The idea that I received is that. These benevolent aliens are far, far superior than, say, the reptilians or the greys.
Mm-hmm.
And they can stop things, but should they stop it or will they stop it? That's a different question.
It is. And any theories or ideas about that?
My idea is that they will stop a total destruction, which, the you know, through their mass media, they are trying to convince people that this 2012 date, which is just going to become even worse as it gets closer, is going to be the end of the earth, that's the end of us, and people are going to be really terrified. It reminded me a bit of the date of 2000, when, you know, vast numbers of Christians believed that this was going to be the return of Jesus Christ, and there was a real, you know, sense for them that this was going to happen, and then it just sort of passed. Something may happen around that date, but I mean, there are many people out there, if you want to call them the white hats, who are even working with inside these agencies, these NSAs and these CIA and NASA, who are working to turn these things around. They don't believe in the agenda that is part of these agencies, and they will sometimes sabotage things so that things don't happen. And then you've got the whole issue of timelines, which, I mean, the American government's been involved in, time travel and the creation of, you know, offshoots of timelines for probably since, you know, the Philadelphia experiment in 1942 or 43. You know, have they created multiple timelines as a mistake, and now apparently that's why they don't do so much time travel anymore. They just do sort of this stretching of time like a little bubble so that they can do, you know, their little negative experiments. There's so many things that are happening, and it's hard to sort of get a vast grip on it. I think that things are definitely speeding up, so that there's a great sort of quickening in effect for humans. Humans are moving so fast, and the benevolent, you see a great deal more people coming out and saying, oh, well, I've been contacted by benevolence and all this sort of thing. I think that there's a presence there by so many different races and people who, like, there's sort of people who are indifferent. They don't really care whether we survive or we don't. They're sort of just here to watch the show. So there's definitely people who are going to help us, and they're going to guide us, but it's up to us to make the decisions to make the right choices.
If we talk a little bit about some of the potential experimentation that goes on in regards to human beings, we're talking about clones or even alien-human hybrids. Do you know, basically why this research is being done, or what the purpose of it is?
There's varying reasons as to why they try to create clones. I mean, there's clones, there's human-alien hybrids, and there's implants. I mean, clones have been around for a while, a few decades. I mean, clones used to be very crude sorts of things to sort of, you'd see them in the movies where they, you know, bump off the leader of a nation and they'd have a clone, and you'd think, ha, ha, that's so funny, that would never happen. But clones have sort of become, there was actually a person whose name escapes me, I'm not very good with names tonight, who really looked into the subject of clones in America, and came across he must have obviously had a few sort of, you know, voices in his ear talking about what they were doing. He was releasing really controversial stuff, saying that, you know, people like Jimmy Carter was a clone, and that there were six clones of Jimmy Carter, and that each president is cloned, and anyone who goes to Camp David is automatically cloned, and sort of Camp David is famous for sending in the clone army. So people go to Camp David and they basically never walk out. Their clone walks out. So you've got that whole issue of clones, and the clones are sort of there to take the place of a famous person so that they can control a nation. And then you've got the whole issue of implants. Who's doing the implanting? I mean, we're sort of told that implants are an extraterrestrial issue. What I've come across is that implants are a form of ownership, and that people can be abducted by, say, an extraterrestrial race, or they can be abducted by the military, and that you can have multiple implants in you by different races as a form of ownership, saying, we own you, this is our implant, we're going to control you. So it's quite bizarre, but I really think that the issue of implants is really being mostly done by the military. And vast numbers, rather than extraterrestrial, it's so easy to blame a race that we don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
And we've never met.
Yeah.
And say, oh, yes, it's those aliens. They're doing it. They're so evil.
Yeah.
But it's really our own militaries. And within each country, you'll have an underground base that is responsible for that. Especially across Europe, you get a lot of that. But of course, you know, in Australia and America, I mean, America has the most underground bases out of anyone. And human alien hybrids, such a weird sort of scenario. It's sort of the stuff of science fiction. Most people don't even believe that even happens. The idea that I gain out of these is that there's a part of human genetics called the metagene factor, and it's apparently a part of our part of our sort of genetics which kicks in. It's like the fight or flight, which psychologists talk about.
Mm.
So when we're put under enormous stress, we run or we fight. And the metagene is a part of us which is in which can turn us into sort of like a superhuman. And apparently humans are very attractive to extraterrestrial races because we have these enormous super capabilities within us. So when people wonder why we get abducted or why we, you know, these, I feel sorry for women who have to have, who fall pregnant and have their babies taken from them. And that's one aspect I look at, especially one woman called Katharina Wilson, who was abducted from the age of 14. I think she had her first child at 14, but she only found this out much later in life. And she's had to live with abduction her whole life. Mm. And she's in her late 30s now. The whole idea of why are they doing this? And it keeps coming back that they are trying to grab this amazing capabilities that we have within us. It's not just a matter of, well, they're just trying to annoy us or they've got nothing to do. It's they're really trying to grasp some part of our DNA or our soul, and by cloning or not necessarily cloning, sorry, but abducting and having these mixed race or alien human children, they're trying to understand, can they create this super race? Can they have their perhaps intelligent capabilities with us, with our metagene factor?
Yeah.
So it
sounds to me like it's ultimately about control in one way. It's about dominance and control. The purpose of a super race to create that, a galactic, you know, super race or intergalactic super race would be to we have this as a, well, obviously as a controlling force, either as a leader type race or as some kind of enforcer race. That's what it sounds like to me. I recognize what you're talking about in regards to the potential of the human soul and so forth. It seems to be almost kind of a harvest thing going on. That could be for the purpose of energy or even some kind of nutrition, if we talk about it in the sense of energy or high dimensional beings. But ultimately, the idea of control, do you think that's true, though? Do you think it's about controlling the different races throughout the universe and getting them all in under the umbrella of a one rulership, so to speak?
Definitely the reptilians are known for that. They sort of jump from planet to planet, and it's sort of recognised by many people who are in contact with extraterrestrial races who inform them that the reptilian race is like a disease that goes through the universe, that they conquer one planet, then they conquer another, then they conquer another, and they have a vast sort of empire on the sort of third or fourth dimension. Yes, they are trying to gain a great deal of power. There's still, of course, the races above them on the fifth and sixth and seventh and beyond dimensions who are far more powerful than they are. I don't think they really care. To them, it's just about the amount of people. We've got more people. People on these other planets look just like us. So perhaps this is why when people visit other planets that you read about and they say, oh, they look just like us.
Mm.
Well, maybe that's because somebody's already been there or a superior race is, well, not superior, but, you know, a more technologically advanced race has already travelled there and created them as apparently they've created us. So, you were saying something about harvesting.
Mm.
One thing Michael Ralph was saying was that they can. It used to be believed that you couldn't separate a soul from, you know, its higher self. But he was saying no. Yes, they can. They actually trade. Souls have amazing amounts of energy, and what they sort of use these parts of, they sort of suck off some of the soul, and they barter it. It's like a form of monetary system.
Currency,
it's bizarre.
Yeah.
And they just barter with, I don't know what they get, but they use it to barter with, and it's an amazing source of energy. So he could foresee that there was sort of like part of his heart kept somewhere in Pine Gap. It's quite bizarre.
Yeah.
And there was another part of him, and they sort of had control. They sort of hooked into him, and they were sucking off energy, and he was feeling, you know, very debilitated, and he had to extract himself from that and get all those parts back. There's just a whole other world out there that we have to try and get our minds around, and if we can do that, then we'll have a lot better time of it as we go through the next couple of years, rather than the person who is continuing to believe that everything in the newspaper is true.
Yeah,
and that's all there is to the world.
Yeah. So do you think that anything of this that we're talking about now is actually happening on the earth right now? Or are there certain people who are more subjected to, shall we call them, some of these parasites? Or do you think that this will open up in a few years potentially, and we will suffer from a more kind of direct onslaught almost, meaning that the earth or the humanity on earth in some way will be harvested, so to speak?
I mean, there are documents to prove that they don't really give a damn about most of us, and they want to reduce the world's population down to about 500,000. For them, that's a very workable number, and that's actually stated in government documents. There's people who've said it, that it's well known. I don't think they're really interested in keeping us all alive on this planet so that they can harvest anything from us, unless if, as we die, apparently they can capture your soul, which is not a very nice thought.
Nope.
But I think that's their intention, and I think that's what's emerging, with this, the swine flu. It's only just sort of starting to begin, although they're always trying to kill us. I mean, let's look at the power lines and, fluoridated water. I mean, you could go on and on.
Yes.
But, the swine flu vaccine, they're really just trying to kill off a great deal of people. And perhaps with that reduced number, that's what they're planning to do. They're planning to perhaps start again and like an Atlantis and advance those people that they've chosen to keep to sort of like superhuman capabilities. But I don't believe that I'll actually get to that. But they can have their plans to do that.
You know, because in one way I feel that we've also been kind of allowed to grow in numbers, so to speak, for a specific reason. It can be a mistake that it gotten out of hand, so to speak, from their point of view, and now they're trying to cull the numbers, the population. But could it also be that there's some kind of larger genetic experimentation that is going on, meaning that the more humans there is on the planet, the more genetic diversity there is, meaning that they're actually kind of looking for certain genetics, certain strands? Could that be the case?
Well, that's another avenue that could be looked into. I mean, there's definitely, if you just look at a human being as a soul, there's definitely more souls now clamoring to be on this planet than ever before. If you believe that a soul chooses to incarnate into a body, why are so many souls trying to get onto Earth right now? I mean, you'd think everybody would be wanting to run the other way, like, oh God, I don't want to go there.
That's
They're
right.
trying to kill us. But there's billions of souls who want to be here. Why do they want to be here? Why? What is that greater meaning to that? That's what I often ponder over. I mean, we can think, these third and fourth dimension entities, they have their plans to do what they want to do with us. But what's the greater plan? Why are all these souls coming here now? What are they trying to learn?
Yeah.
What are they hoping to do with so many souls on the earth? I think if somebody can break that question, then we have, I think that these souls are coming to be here because there's a great thing that's about to happen with humanity. Not at all do I believe that, you know, their swine flu vaccine or whatever else they want to do is going to actually work. These souls want to come here because they want to be part of something fantastic. So they can allow people to, they think they may be allowing people to breathe, but I really think they're quite arrogant. They don't really have any control over that. There's a greater plan here at work, and it's got nothing to do with religion, but it's just to do with the universe and the plan for humanity. And, you know, we'll have to see what happens over the next couple of years, but you have to remember all these souls want to be here, and so that should be looked into.
Absolutely. And what do you think will turn this around? Because, again, be it that we look into some of the things that we've talked about here today, or even just, you know, kind of in quotes here, down-to-earth stuff, like you mentioned with the swine flu, there's, you know, so much problem and strife, war, starvation, you know, all this stuff that is happening right now on the earth. And so the question that comes here is, you know, what will turn this around? Is it a massive awakening that potentially is going to happen within the next few years, or what do you think is going to happen and is going to be needed to happen for this to actually change in some way?
There's a great need by people out there to know the truth. I mean, as my book is called Too Many Secrets, there are just too many secrets. There is too much hidden. And people are so sick of it. They're so sick of all these lies, all these cover-ups. Everybody, you ask anyone about their government, they don't trust their own government. Whereas 40 years ago, people probably mostly did trust their government. They believed that they were going to make the right decision for them, and they believed that there was a difference between a two-party system. Nowadays, people just think they're all just liars. They're all the same. People are so sick of it. And, you know, wanting to, I think what's going to really change everything is with over the next 2 or 3 years, people are going to just, not necessarily necessarily revolt, but they're just going to use their power as people, as a mass of people, to just say, look, enough. Look at the recent anniversary of the moon landing, which was the 40 year anniversary, brought up all these things again. The moon landing was one of the great things for, you know, the American sort of people. You know, look, we did it, we beat Russia, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But, even Neil Armstrong couldn't even, you know, who was the astronaut, always talks as if he knows a great deal more about what's really gone on in the whole moon program. And he just won't turn up to these things, these events that they organize to celebrate all this, and he won't turn up. What does he know that's been hidden? It'd be good to have a great chat with him. That'd be really interesting.
That would be really interesting.
But he won't.
It's true. It's something there that, I mean, either it is evidence that he or they, I mean, again, NASA is a military organization. They're under military orders, pretty much. I mean, again, going back to what Buzz Aldrin said on a C-SPAN interview not too long ago, as he was in the studio talking with one of the interviewers there, he mentioned that it was a military program, and his greatest honor in all of his military career was to salute the flag when he was on the moon and all that stuff. But he mentioned some other stuff as well there, that they found a monolith on Phobos, for instance, some kind of artificial constructed thing there. And there's something there that is interesting. But Buzz Aldrin seems to be able to talk a little bit about it at least. But Neil Armstrong, it could be evidence that he has gone through some kind of, as you mentioned before, memory. He has his memory erased or something like that, or he simply, they can't let him out there to speak because he knows too much and people will ask him too many hard questions. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Well, one of the most well-known researchers into the moon, Richard Hoagland.
Hoagland, yes.
He has a great deal of contact with all these astronauts. And he was only saying about a year ago that One of the most amazing things he finds about all these astronauts who've been to the moon is their complete inability to remember what they actually did when they were on the moon.
That's right.
And they sort of come back and they say, wow, that was great. Wow, fantastic. But when people actually say, okay, so what did you do there? Or, you know, asking for details, he admitted to this Richard Hoagland in private that he has absolutely no memory of what he did. And Richard Hoagland has publicly come out and said that he believes that the astronauts are having their minds erased, their memories, sorry, of what they do on the moon, because they are seeing and taking part in, you know, missions to either photograph ruins that are on the moon, or they're going to bases up there, or at least this is what they were doing in the 70s before they finished the moon program.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that he believed that the reason Neil Armstrong refused to have anything to do with most of any of these festivities was that he was the only one that they left alone, that they didn't erase his memory. And so he has such a great deal of trouble with what he's seen, because he remembers everything he's done and he's seen, that he will not take part in it, because to him it's all a lie, which is just an amazing, you know, revelation about the moon program and their astronauts.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, if we go back a little bit to, I guess, talk about the kind of the mass awakening that needs to take place as well, do you think that it's about people finally kind of standing up on their hind legs and finally becoming human beings, you know, actually as saying no to all this stuff? Because again, to me, it seems to be, we have all this information, we know more now, and we are more distrusting now of the authorities and so forth. But yet, with all that at our disposal, information-wise, people are still not kind of doing anything about it, if you know what I mean.
Yes, there's a great sort of mass of people who are still asleep. And that's terribly worrying, that they are still buying into that whole facade of that, you know, Iraq really did have weapons of mass destruction, and we, you know, Osama bin Laden did do 9/11, all that sort of rubbish. They still believe it. And all I can hope for is that they will be eventually awakened by the sort of events that will come, where people do stand up and say, enough, we know what you've done. I think there will always be, though, an element of people who simply always believe their government and always believe that the president or the prime minister of your country is right and never lies. I think there will always be an element of those people, and there is no aliens and there's no underground bases and all that sort of thing. There's simply no way to convince everybody of the truth that's out there. But definitely, there's a massive awakening that's about to happen, and that's why they're rushing. You know, the secret elite are rushing through things. They're making mistakes with things where people are picking up. One of the most famous, you know, 9/11, where people were finding faults in the story hours after it happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And also with the London bombings, you know, people were saying, well, hang on, look at that, or hang on, no, that's not right. And it was just days or hours after it happened, because they're really rushing to try and either get rid of most of us or still convince us that we have to live in a world of fear. But the, you know, if you believe there's some sort of you know, spiritual life to the universe, that it will push humanity forward, and there's nothing they can do about that.
No.
Humans will stand up, they will ask questions. Hopefully, if we can do it in a most peaceful way as possible, that would be fantastic, because
yes,
we don't want to see people, you know, thousands, millions of people being killed. So if we can do that peacefully, intelligently, that is the best way to do it. But
yes,
that doesn't mean that they won't try to say, oh, no, we're not going to listen to you, but we have to try.
Absolutely. And do you think that, the authorities kind of know a little bit about this, you know, mass awakening. They're afraid of this, and this is their escape plan in a way, either to go underground or they might even need or want to go off planet. And that's one of the reasons why this activity has been going on. Would that be the case?
I think they're terribly frightened of humanity, not only because there's more of us, but that we are far more powerful than they ever want to admit. You know, a funny sort of theory that I came across with Michael Relf was that the man from the Mars program was that the planet X, which you hear so very little about lately, was actually, I mean, it's not a planet, it's actually a very, very large ship. And it is coming towards us, but it's not necessarily us that those people or those beings are after. It's actually after the reptilians, if you want to call them, or the greys, or it's after those controlling people. And that's why they're digging themselves into the earth. They're trying to get away. They're trying to dig themselves in because they're going to have a war with those people. Hmm. And it's got really nothing to do with us, or very little to do with us.
We've just been trapped in between here, in a way, in a intergalactic war.
Yes, we're like the children in a divorce. We're just watching and thinking, oh my goodness, what is going on?
Right.
We're just trapped in the middle. But these are sort of the big head honchos coming back to sort of have a look at what's going on, and the idea is that they've sort of strayed a bit from what they were supposed to be doing. And so they're terrified and they're burying themselves down deep. So that's just the theory.
Yes.
And they keep trying to make out that we've got this seed bank in Norway because, you know, climactic, you know, never know what could happen. It can survive for 1,000 years. But how very strange that, you know, they should suddenly be doing this. And that they've got all these continuity of government operations going on. They're definitely ensuring their own survival. But as for us, I mean, we just have to stand up and say, well, enough, and we want to know what's going on. But I think that's definitely happening. You know, like we're having this conversation, people will listen to it, people will become aware. It's all about becoming aware, and people are definitely doing that. The internet is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to us in the last century. So the internet is greatly helping that facilitation of information, which is why they're trying to shut down the internet now.
Absolutely. And they want to, again, instigate control. And I think the implementation of more control, police state, security, technological advancement overall, which is being kind of turned against in a way. It's all about the eye in the sky and the spying on us and all that stuff. I think that they want to have that system in place before the mass awakening takes place. So they think it'll be easier for them to control us after that point. And that might even be the case if people actually go take, you know, the vaccinations, to take the potential upcoming, you know, implantations of microchips or what have you. It could be that we kind of become capped, so to speak, in our evolutionary progress, the spiritual progress that we are going through that I see. And they might want to try to prevent that before that takes place. What do you think about that?
Well, vaccines definitely do stunt your spiritual growth. Now, of course, there's going to be no research study on that that is peer-reviewed, but vaccines given to children at such a young age definitely hamper their spiritual development. That's why they are so anti against people who choose not to vaccinate their children.
Yeah.
They truly know what vaccines can do. It's not just about maybe causing stunted growth or autism. It's so much more vast than that. And the surveillance that's going on, it's very clever the way they do it. It's little by little by little. It's not just whammo, you know, here it is, here's all the cameras, here's the cards so we can track you, here's the RFID chips, all this sort of thing. It's little by little, and it's usually as a form of fear, like, don't worry, we'll put this RFID chip in your credit card, that way no one can misuse it, and we'll put these surveillance cameras here. That way, you know, if you get attacked, we'll be able to track down the perpetrator. And you see, and here comes the media in to help with that. They, you know, you see these television programs where they solve crimes and they use surveillance technologies to help solve the crime.
Yeah.
And so it's like reinforcing, yes, look, it does help. And you know, the sort of the, I feel terribly sorry for people who live in the United Kingdom because they are under such great surveillance.
Yes.
And you know, sometimes in Australia we get some of the United Kingdom or British television programs, and in Australia we don't have a great deal of surveillance cameras. They are sort of here and there, but in British TV shows, you see them solving crimes solely with surveillance cameras.
Yeah.
It's quite bizarre. So you have the media as like a right hand backing up their ridiculous surveillance systems that hardly ever help solve any more crimes than what they did before without the surveillance cameras, for example. So
nice.
I don't know what the situation is in Sweden, how severe the surveillance is.
Well, it is pretty much across the board now. I mean, it's on buses. It's in, you know, obviously in any kind of store and these types of environments. But it's beginning to pop up outside on the streets as well. It's starting on outside, you know, ATM machines, things like this. But again, it's widespread and especially under the EU now, that they're definitely going to have a high technological system in place, I feel, if they get their will through, that is, which is going to be every European citizen is going to be tracked and monitored by this. I think the UK has been, in this case, the guinea pig in this experiment, and I think what they have there will going to get up here and in all the other European countries as well. So you mentioned a bit in regards to Australia about the surveillance cameras and so forth. How is it in other aspects, if we talk about, you know, Big Brother, government and listening, wiretaps, et cetera? Is it bad in Australia as well?
It is bad, but I can see that it's much, much worse in other countries. They do use such events as 9/11 and the London bombing and sort of the terrorist act that gets passed in our government or parliaments to justify things like police can, go without a warrant into, you know, if there's a suspected of terrorism, you know, what terrorism? We don't have any, probably the same as Sweden, there's no sort of terrorist acts.
No.
But just because something happens in another country very far away, you know, it gets used as a very convenient thing so that they can, go and do that. And you know, we have the cameras on the buses, obviously, like you do, the cameras at the ATMs, cameras in stores, in businesses, and so it's sort of it's very pervasive, and people come to accept it as, well, this is part of our life, this is necessary, and turning, the problem is undoing that is almost impossible.
Yeah.
To undo that level of surveillance. It's like trying to rip an underground base out of the ground. How do you do that?
Yeah.
I couldn't even begin to imagine how you would do that. Once they're created, it's very difficult to undo, and it's so important for people to be aware of these changes, which usually get shoved through our parliament at Christmas time when no one's really looking.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's hidden stuff in every legislation. It's definitely deliberately engineered that way so that we don't notice it, and most people don't care because they haven't yet seen any restriction to their life.
Yeah, exactly.
So they still go to work every day and they still do their shopping.
Yeah.
So how is it hurting them? It's really hard to convince people sometimes that this is actually really not a good situation. It's a very, very much an uphill battle.
Absolutely. And what people have to understand is that although the reason for the implementation now might seem as a good idea or whatever, it might look good on the surface, as you say, it helps prevent crime, blah, 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 all that stuff. But what people also need to realize is that this when this technological grid is in place, someone, well, let's say another freaking dictator has to the surface and look at the technological system that they will have in place in order to actually control the population even more, you know. It's going to be a totally different situation than they had when the, you know, under Stalin or under Hitler or anything like that. This is going to be a totally new level to control. Mm-hmm. And that's what we'll have to realize. Just because people are talking about democracy and you know, fairness and all that, that doesn't mean that we have it, and definitely not that we will have it in the future as well, you know?
That's exactly right. We're going through the same sort of problems that we had in, you know, World War II, where there's these dictatorships are emerging almost by stealth.
Yeah.
And people don't seem to be noticing what's going on. I mean, of course, there is a vast number of people who are very aware of what's going on, but there's sort of other people who can't seem to put this jigsaw together. And sometimes I think of it as a jigsaw, where you've got all these different things which are seemingly unconnected or unrelated. But if you research enough and you read enough and you listen well enough, you can put it all together. It's just a big jigsaw that you've got to put together and realize exactly what's going on. So, yes, the dictatorships are emerging and our rights are being taken away. And once a law is passed to take a right away, I can't think of a single situation where it's ever been given back.
Yeah, exactly.
Usually that leads to a war. So hopefully, you know, we're not going to go through a World War III. I think that's exactly why they're a bit smarter this time. They're trying to make us weak. They're much more clever with their science and their surveillance of us. So they're trying to weaken us with all sorts of viruses. You know, poor swine flu, which isn't really taking hold anywhere.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, anyone with a cold has the swine flu.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm sure I've had the swine flu about 400 million times my whole life, every time I've had the cold.
Yeah.
But this is going to be another way to weaken us with the swine flu vaccine. So that's another way that they're going to try and take away our rights, so mandatory vaccination. Well, Where did our rights get taken away? Where did our right to refuse ever get taken away? And that's where people missed it. They missed that legislation which was passed through their government to take away their rights.
Yeah. They were busy enjoying the bread and the circuses, as I say, you know, and in many cases it's about manipulating the perception as well, as you say, because it isn't really, you know, the doctors don't seem to be able to classify the swine flu, for instance, but just as you say, just because someone has the flu, then, must be the swine flu, and it's all about manipulating the ideas about this thing, and nothing is really mandatory either. It's just that the media puts out the perception that, yeah, you have to go and take this, but if you actually go to some of the official sources, you know, health sources and so forth, they just recommend it, but they give out the perception in the media that is mandatory. So everyone gets scared and obviously rush to go get it as soon as it's available. So it is very, very tricky.
They will certainly try that tack. You're coming into your winter in the Northern Hemisphere, and we're just coming out of our winter in the Southern Hemisphere.
Mm.
So they really tried to frighten us here in Australia, and people were... I think we've only had about 20 people in Australia perhaps die of swine flu. But what they've had to admit was that all these people had underlying health problems, which, you know, their immunity was already vastly weakened. So once you realise that, well, you think, well, yes, these poor sick people, they did die of swine flu, but, you know, they were already sick. And luckily, you know, the vaccine isn't yet available, and we're just coming into our summer, so we seem to be fine. It's going to be really interesting to watch, particularly America, who are very gung-ho with their democracy and their constitution and their Bill of Rights, to see exactly what they're going to be doing when push comes to shove and you know, some states of the United States have passed laws saying that they're going to mandatory vaccinate. What's going to happen there? It's going to be very interesting to watch that and see what's going to happen to us. Because I think this is just one, you know, the swine flu vaccine is going to be just one method of weakening humanity. It's just this is our time to sort of stand up and say no, we're not going to do it, and do it peacefully, and hopefully, you know, we'll all awaken. Hopefully,
absolutely, I totally agree with you. Why don't we spend the last couple of minutes here just talking about some of the I guess positive perceptions when it comes to maybe not underground bases and so forth, but more of the mythology surrounding the Hollow Earth, and talk about the two different issues or concepts of what is known as Shambhala and Agatha. There are these pretty much, well, how should we put it, peaceful, wonderful places that potentially exist within the Hollow Earth, that they are, one, I guess, is up in the northern pole and one at the southern pole. And do you think that these are just myths and legends, or do you think that these actually are up there in some way and can be accessible and visited, so to speak?
Shambhala seems to be fairly a physical place, but it seems to waver between the third and fourth dimension when you really look into the descriptions of where it is and how someone gets to it. Where I came to place Shambhala was in Tibet, rather than at any sort of pole. But unfortunately in my book, I took a very negative view of Shambhala because...
Oh, really?
Shambhala... I'll just turn everything upside down. Shambhala has a very sort of saccharine sweet sort of, isn't this a lovely thing? We've got Shambhala and all the folklore and attached to it. But when I really looked at the descriptions of Shambhala, what I really took from it was that it was an underground base.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
You know, you've got people who tried to get near it just before World War II. There was a Nicholas Roerich.
Roerich, yeah, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, who tried to, you know, get as close to it as he could. He had guides and so forth with it. And in his sort of memoirs, he was writing, well, I saw all these flying saucers, or I think he probably didn't call them flying saucers, but flying, you know, ships in the sky, and then, you know, the his guys were incredibly afraid to go near past a certain point, and if they tried to go too far, then sort of what I really interpreted as like a defense mechanism to prevent people from going too far, people would you know, gases would emit from the earth and you'd fall unconscious and all this sort of thing, maybe very crude compared to sort of the underground bases we have today where we have them armed and so forth. But, you know, really like an underground base. And when, you know, in the sort of the old books which describe who lives at Shambhala, they're talking about sort of thousands and thousands of armed or armies. And it didn't seem to be very much like a spiritual center at all.
No, that's right.
Or if people could go there for sort of spiritual contemplation, they were the sort of elite. Almost like it was not really for us, not for the lower people. So Shambhala, and then I think David Icke hints at Shambhala having a reptilian connection. The White Brotherhood of the Snake.
Yes.
Who also inhabit the Tibetan mountains, and of course it would be what I believe is that if you've got sort of two sort of different stories coming from the same area, it's got to be the same sort of, you know, place. Like, it's one underground base, and you've got this Brotherhood of the Snake, who are the reptilians. So you've got the reptilians right in the same area as Shambhala, and I'm thinking, well, hang on, this could really be a reptilian base. But then there's sort of hints that maybe they're the good reptilians, which, of course, it's important not to, you know, tarnish all people who are from the reptilian races with the same brush.
Sure.
There are some that are good.
Mm.
So, unfortunately, my undertaking of, or my taking of Shambhala was that it was a place that sort of interfered in world affairs. You've got the king of the world, who apparently was connected to Shambhala, who interfered in political sort of decisions of the world, who kept information from you know, the rest of the world, like under the Vatican, you've got, you know, the library of hidden books and manuscripts, which you know, no one can ever see.
Mm.
It's the same sort of thing happening at Shambhala.
Mm.
Which sort of makes me a little bit angry that they sort of keep all this stuff and they don't let us see it.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
With a guy, well, fortunately for a garter, you know, the guy who came up with the term, or first coined the term a garter, which has a very long name, Joseph Alvi, Saint Alve. That's a French name, and I can't pronounce it.
Yeah, I know. I won't know which one you were talking about. I can have a link up this this person's bio from Wikipedia, so people can take a look at it. But go ahead.
Oh yeah, Joseph Alvier. I'll just stop trying to pronounce it. He was he coined it, and he believed he was in contact with people from Agassi. And that they had a sort of a form of government known as synarchy, which is the opposite of anarchy.
Hmm.
And synarchy is a sort of a form of government where the problem we have today, where you have an elite group of people who are hidden behind the face, you know, the puppets, the politicians of government who we think are really controlling everything, and they make all the decisions for the lower people. And we don't really have any much of a say. And this is apparently the type of government that Agassi had. And to me, that is just a nightmare.
Mm.
So it's not really clear as to whether he ever went to Agassi in his writings or whether he had a chat to them. But it certainly didn't sound like you know, like an ideal for humanity.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I really didn't take very good, very positive views of Shambhala or Agassi.
Yeah, no, but
I think, unfortunately, they've had a great deal of folklore to often hide their true nature. But when you really look at the details of it, you think in a modern framework, you can see, well, hang on, this looks a lot like the old, you know, version or the versions of the modern-day underground base.
Yes. Well, that's really interesting, and I think it's good to shatter those illusions that we might have about it if it's not true. You know, it doesn't matter. We need to go where the information leads, and this is one interpretation that you made of it, so I think it's good that we got that out as well, you know, in that sense. so no worries about that. But maybe then, Kathleen, we can just round things up here again on the note of letting people know. Mention the title of your book, where people can go to find out more information about it, of course, and how they can get a copy.
Okay, sure. The name of my book is Too Many Secrets, Humanity's Fight to Expose the Secret Underground World. You can go to my website, toomanysecrets.synthesize.com, or if you have trouble putting the website in, you can just type in my name in Google or Yahoo, Kathleen McAleen, and it will bring up my website. And on my website, it just tells you how to purchase the book. There's a form you can download to send to me, or you can just scribble your details on a piece of paper, which I have a lot of that, especially from you, especially from Europe, where they just tell me where to send it. But it just tells you things like postage, and I'll sign a book for you, and I'll send that off very quickly for you.
Okay, wonderful. Again, the website, toomanysecrets.synthasite.com. And the name is Too Many Secrets, Humanity's Fight to Expose the Secret Underground Worlds. Thank you very much, Kathleen, for coming on. It was really great having you here.
Thank you so much. I've had such a great time talking to you, and I hope people can take away something positive from what we've spoken about today. And I look forward to waking up with everyone and finding a great new birth in the future.
That's our program with Kathleen McErlain. My thanks to you for joining us and to Frederick and Elizabeth. We will be back soon with Anthony and Derek from We Are Change Ireland. We have Aaron Kaplan with us to talk about Operation High Jump and Admiral Byrd. That's a good follow-up to this program. MEP Martha Andreasen will join us to discuss the corruption within the European Union. Andrew Basiago on the discovery of life on Mars. And filmmaker Kevin P. Miller will join us to discuss his film Generation RX. More information available on redicecreations.com. Take a look at the entry forms as well in the member section if you want to fire away a question to an upcoming guest or suggest a topic or a guest. Thank you for listening. My name is Henrik, and we will talk more soon.